Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Newsmakers from America and around the world speak with journalists in an unscripted and unrehearsed discussion about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. Here is your host on this edition of Press Conference USA, Carol Castiel.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is VOA health reporter Carol Pearson. Our topic on this edition of the program, the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. Our special guest, Dr. Stephen Morse. He's an epidemiologist at the School of Public Health at Columbia University in New York City. He is also the global co-director of PREDICT, the infectious disease surveillance component of the U.S. Agency for International Development's Emerging Pandemic Threats Program. The Ebola epidemic now raging across three countries in West Africa, Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, is the deadliest outbreak in history for the disease, which was first detected nearly 40 years ago in Central Africa. There is no known cure or proven vaccine for Ebola, which is usually fatal. Patients may experience fever, vomiting, diarrhea, body aches, and uncontrollable bleeding from all openings in the body, including the eyes, mouth, and ears. Ebola is spread through contact with bodily fluids of an infected person, which can be stopped by using simple precautionary measures and basic hygienic practices. Health officials have warned the public to avoid direct contact with the blood or bodily fluids of Ebola patients, but their efforts have been hampered by a widespread distrust of doctors and hospitals and an insistence on traditional hands-on burial methods, all of which allowed the Ebola virus to spread. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, issued its highest alert last week in response to the outbreak of Ebola. The World Health Organization is considering whether to declare a global health emergency and says that it will convene an ethics panel to discuss the use of an experimental treatment for Ebola. Meantime, Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has declared a state of emergency as the Ebola epidemic continues to take hundreds of lives in her country and others in West Africa. According to WHO, Ebola has now killed more than 930 people this year in West Africa in an outbreak Doctors Without Borders has called unprecedented and absolutely out of control. Outside the two in Nigeria, all of the deaths have occurred in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. And Dr. Stephen Morse joins us by phone from his office at Columbia University to discuss all aspects of the epidemic and what can be done to contain and prevent it. Dr. Morse, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to join you.
And I'm also delighted to welcome my colleague, Carol Pearson.
Thank you, Carol.
Well, Dr. Morse, just remind us what precipitated this latest outbreak.
Well, very likely it was one or two people in Guinea who became infected perhaps by going into the forest and coming in contact with secretions or excretions from a fruit bat, which is the natural host, or perhaps from an ape, which can also become infected, or one other species, the duiker kind of antelope that also has been a source of infection on occasion. And we know in the past people have found dead chimpanzees or duikers, taken them home, and unfortunately gotten Ebola. And then I suspect probably after that happened, it took a while to recognize that it was Ebola because this area has not seen Ebola before. So it was unexpected, and that may have allowed it to move to other places, the Sierra Leone and Liberia, before people recognized what was happening.
And what are the factors, in your view, that have exacerbated the spread this time around since 40 years ago, given the revolution in communications and travel? What are some of the factors you think that account for its more deadly spread this time?
Well, I think, for one thing, the fact that this area was not expecting Ebola. It had not been seen here before. There is another hemorrhagic fever, Lassa fever, that is found throughout this area. and in many ways seems similar. It's caused by an unrelated virus, but it's endemic there. It's widespread there. And so there may have been delays in diagnosis. And of course, the people are not experienced, neither the healthcare workers nor the families of the patients are not experienced with seeing this. So it seems very dramatic and mysterious, very hard to understand, very frightening, understandably. But also, if you haven't had experience with it, you're not sure what precautions, and it may take you a while to understand how to deal with it and how to view this virus.
And the incubation period, Dr. Morse, is up to 3 weeks. So there would be a lot of people who initially wouldn't know how they got it.
That's absolutely true. And it's also quite possible that some of the original patients or originally infected people with Ebola could have gone to some of these other countries, to Liberia, Sierra Leone. And now we know Mr. Sawyer went from Liberia to Nigeria, and there's an outbreak there, as far as I know entirely, in healthcare workers. So people could have moved while they were incubating the disease and then come down with it in another country.
Now, I would like to ask a question about how it spread, because a lot of people want to know that. The man who traveled from Liberia to Nigeria was said to have been vomiting on board the plane, but, you know, it's through bodily fluids. So would it be through sweat? Like if you're sweating and somebody mops your brow, does it spread that way too?
That's possible. It's almost always through excreta or bodily fluids like blood. You know, if you are handling the body, preparing the body for burial, internal bleeding, for example, it's possible that there could be some in sweat, and there is some in saliva, we know that, and other fluids. Whether that's a good route, a way people can become infected, it's theoretically possible, and we don't know whether that's actually ever happened. It could. So you want to be very careful when you are that close to someone with Ebola and you're handling them, you're touching them. But it does not spread by the airborne or respiratory route. So unlike the flu, for example, there's no danger there.
And I understand that the virus is actually not that stable, that if you use disinfectants, hand sanitizer, wash your hands, that this can go a long way in preventing its spread.
Absolutely. And in the past, before we had some of the more sophisticated equipment we have now, you know, people actually did just that and did not get infected. So, you know, good hygienic precautions if you don't have gloves, for example, or other types of protective equipment. Washing your hands if you're near an Ebola patient or taking care of an Ebola patient, washing your hands frequently and using ordinary disinfectants on furniture or floors is perfectly good.
Dr. Morse, that leads me to ask you about the situation in many of these African countries. You know, the poor public health systems and lack of proper hygienic practices, perhaps, and then these cultural practices, burial practices that could also exacerbate the problem. To what extent are we going to address these fundamental factors?
I'm glad you brought that up, because I think the lack of a public health infrastructure is really a serious issue, and there really needs to be a strong public health infrastructure. There have been a few efforts towards that direction in recent years by WHO's Regional Office for Africa and by USAID, the Agency for International Development, through, for example, the Emerging Pandemic Threats Program. But in reality, there's a need to do this on a larger scale and a wider scale, and I think that would be extremely helpful, because the public health infrastructure is very variable and really needs to stretch across these countries. This is a multinational outbreak. As they say, these diseases do not know borders. They don't need passports. And therefore, the response and the public health systems have to be coordinated with each other and sharing information. I think we've seen some progress in that direction, but I hope we'll be able to do a lot more quickly. And certainly the Ebola outbreak is an indication of what needs to be done.
So what you seem to be alluding to is the fact that there needs to be an African Centers for Disease Control with experts on board in countries and also wherever this central program exists.
That would be one approach, and that I think would be very helpful. There have been attempts to do that. So one of the problems, obviously, is maintaining the resources and maintaining the multinational continent-wide cooperation, especially, as you know, at times there are various political upheavals right now in the Eastern Congo, for example, which can impede international cooperation in this area. So I think that, yes, we do need a unified network, or at least something that can respond more rapidly. And that would be very helpful, because it takes quite some time to assemble the team and bring people in from other countries or even the affected nations to be able to respond. And I think in part because of the lack of a really strong public health infrastructure, recognition of an outbreak is often very delayed.
I also wanted to get back to something that seems to be allowing this epidemic to spread, and that is that people have been told that there is no special treatment for it. And in fact, I mean, there's no Cipro that takes it away. There's no medication that can improve your health in that way, except perhaps for some of these experimental vaccines or serums. But the thing is, people look at these isolation units as death traps and are avoiding them and avoiding treatment. There have been attacks on aid workers who are working trying to collect bodies, or Doctors Without Borders has been attacked. Tell us about, is there really no treatment for Ebola? And are these responses to what they view as a death trap spreading the virus?
Well, there are some specific treatments, the equivalent of Cipro, in the pipeline. So they're in experimental drugs right now. But as was well publicized, one of them in particular has been tried out. And hopefully this can be done and used in a way that will be helpful and would help us to understand whether these drugs will be useful and how they can be best used. So there's still work to be done there, but even now, untreated, this infection with this particular Zaire strain has about a 90% mortality rate. Doctors Without Borders, Médecins Sans Frontières, has put a lot of effort, and I think has about 600 people on the ground, in working on this epidemic, and through a lot of very intensive supportive measures has managed to get the mortality rate down closer to 50% or 60%. And that's because of all the medical intervention. If the patients didn't go to the right kind of clinic or didn't go to a hospital, they would have much lower chance of survival. But it's possible to give very intensive supportive care to try to tide the patient over the bad periods, make sure that they are properly hydrated, they get fluids, take care of any other infections, bacterial infections, for example, that may occur while they're sick. They're more susceptible to that. Deal with any clotting abnormalities or other problems with the blood, such as using anticoagulants, using drugs to raise the blood pressure and prevent shock. And all of these things have worked to lower the mortality rate and help many patients survive. So I think now it is a good idea to go to these hospitals. And these healthcare workers who are very much in the front line, a number of them have died because of exposure to Ebola while they were treating patients. So these healthcare workers really are in the front line, and you know, they're really in many ways doing heroic actions, and they're really trying to save people's lives. So I think, you know, they should be encouraged, and we just simply don't have enough people to do this.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Dr. Stephen Morse. He's an epidemiologist at the School of Public Health at Columbia University in New York City. He is also the global co-director of PREDICT,
the infectious disease surveillance component of USAID's Emerging Pandemic Threats Program. I'm Carol Castiel, along with VOA health reporter Carol Pearson. This is a reminder that Press Conference USA is also available online as a podcast. Please visit our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. Also, we love to hear from you. Please send your feedback on guests and topics to PCUSA@voanews.com. We also have a fan page on Facebook, so check it out and like us at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA. Here's a shout-out to Amos Mwanga from Tanga, Tanzania. If you want to hear your name on the show, send us an email or leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, Dr. Morse. And I want to go back to the political issues, the larger reasons for the outbreak. One analyst said that the current crisis is not so much a medical or biological one as a political one, that countries do need technical support from the outside, but they will not succeed in stopping the virus until each nation's leaders embrace effective governance. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I think that's absolutely true. And, you know, that is one of the reasons why I think that there isn't an effective public health infrastructure. So I hope that we'll teach some lessons.
And, you know, in a corollary, it appears that Ebola is an African disease at its origins. You alluded to that earlier. It's transmitted to humans from an animal reservoir, and these reservoirs are endemic in Africa. So that leads me to ask you, do you think that that may be why we don't have a cure yet? I mean, to what extent do you think it's because it is primarily an African disease and pharmaceutical companies can't make much money from it, perhaps, that we have not yet found or have had the incentive to really push for a cure?
I think that's part of the reason. You know, certainly the economic incentives for pharmaceutical and vaccine manufacturers, you know, clearly are an important consideration. But another issue is that there were technical hurdles that had to be overcome. For a long time, it was difficult to make a vaccine, similar to the situation with HIV.
This disease, it's a sporadic outbreak. You know, you may not see it for a while.
Yes, and, you know, as you can see from its appearing here, also largely unpredictable at this stage. The virus, for example, has been in this area for at least since 2006. A recent paper actually looked at some old samples that were negative for Lassa fever but had a hemorrhagic fever, and I think about 8% of them turned out to be positive for Ebola, but they never turned into a big outbreak.
Now you're talking about in West Africa.
You know, so it is sporadic, and that is the problem with a vaccine. You know, other than healthcare workers and laboratory workers and so on, who is the target? Who is the group that should be receiving it? So that makes for a difficult decision unless you give it to everyone. This is a rare disease, so you probably won't be able to give it to everyone.
And Dr. Morse, let's talk about current efforts to contain this crisis now, whether it's sending teams of doctors and technical experts to money and funds that are being applied. And what about educational campaigns? Because we talked about some of the cultural impediments to preventing the spread of the disease, whether it's burial practices or just people in denial, whether in Liberia or Sierra Leone, thinking, well, you know, this is something else, this can't be Ebola, etc. You know, this sort of sense of, well, not taking enough precautions because they're sort of suspicious.
I believe very much in the need for education at all levels, both the healthcare workers and, of course, the public. And that obviously is something that needs to be done. There's still a lot of work to be done. Now that it's possible to actually treat people and save many of them, I think there's good reason for Ebola patients to go to the hospitals. But I also think that family members and others who may be taking care of these patients can do it safely if they're very careful about good hygienic or infection control practices. And that's true, I think, even of burial practices, if they're done carefully. I think kissing the deceased may be difficult. I think that would be dangerous. But, you know, certainly preparing the body, if one is wearing gloves or uses a frequent hand washing, I think could be done safely. And I also want to send my condolences and my sympathies to the people who are suffering through this now in all of these countries. I know it must be a very painful time for many people, and I think education will do a lot to help take some of the fright, because it is a dramatic looking disease, and take some of the mystery out of this.
And just a quick follow-up, do you see these types of educational campaigns being implemented right now? And what about other international efforts? Do you think the international community is doing enough to recognize the severity of this outbreak and to contain it?
I think the international community is beginning to recognize how serious this is. And most of these Ebola outbreaks have been, you know, somewhat limited in scope and duration. This is the largest and the most geographically dispersed of any we've ever had, and the least expected as well. So, you know, that I think took a lot of people, both internationally and in the region, by surprise. Clearly, there aren't enough people, and there never probably will be, in terms of healthcare workers, epidemiologists, educators, to really take care of all the needs. So the people who are taking care of the patients, Médecins Sans Frontières has, I think, 600 people there, mm-hmm. and there is a similar number if you put together all of the WHO and CDC teams, the other international response. But that really isn't enough because it takes a lot of work. It's a labor-intensive thing to take care of these patients. So we need more people. The people doing it now are working 18 or 20-hour days. And also epidemiologists to help trace the infection, find those who have been in contact and monitor them, or do whatever might be done in the future when we have perhaps some more specific things, more specific drugs, monitor them to make sure that they're safe and haven't become infected, and obviously to take care of them if they do become infected and show signs of disease. So that's part of the international response. That's part of the regional response as well. But it needs to be done, obviously, with many more people on a larger scale. In terms of the educational efforts, I think there's a lot more that needs to be done there. And that's something we are always sort of still learning how to do.
Now, I spoke with a nurse who is training medical workers and even janitors on how to stay safe while taking care of Ebola patients. She was in Monrovia, Liberia, and she said that you can't turn on the radio without hearing something about Ebola and how to prevent the infection. And all over Monrovia now, there are buckets where you can wash your hands before entering a bank or something like that. Is this the kind of thing that needs to be done throughout in any populated city in these countries?
Yes, I think that's a step in the right direction. You know, hopefully the information by radio is good information, you know, but also to demystify it a little bit so that people know that if they take proper precautions, or if they don't have anybody with Ebola in their family that they're taking care of, they're probably at very low risk. So that, I think, is an important point to remember. And I think hand washing, things like that, we were doing that during the preparations for the influenza pandemic, and Ebola spreads much more slowly and not nearly as well as influenza. So I think we learned something from that experience, and it's applicable here in terms of hand washing and hygienic practices. The health workers can help them. And you mentioned the janitors. That's a very good point, because we often overlook the people working in these clinics who have to do these routine tasks. They themselves are coming in contact with infected materials. And so they also need to learn how to protect themselves and take proper precautions. The janitors, the laundries, and so on. And the medical waste. Very often there's a bloody diarrhea. So all of that medical waste, as well as needles and so on, needs to be properly disposed of.
And as we conclude, Dr. Morse, you know, we have a lot of listeners in that part of the world, whether, West Africa. Any message that you'd like to impart to them with regard to how to protect themselves, how to lobby their political leaders to, you know, jumpstart a much more effective public health infrastructure, you know, all of these things?
Thank you. I think your question contains many of the necessary components of an answer. You know, we talked about how people can protect themselves, and it really requires close contact with an Ebola patient, basically touching or splashing into your eyes, something like that, blood or other infected bodily fluids. So being careful there, either wearing gloves and a mask or frequent hand washing are good precautions. Politically, I think there is a need, obviously, for better, more unified responses across the continent. And this has been tried before, but it's never really gotten off the ground. So hopefully this will provide some encouragement to that. For most people, although we hear a lot about Ebola, even people in this region, if you haven't been in contact with someone who has Ebola, or perhaps someone who was in contact with an Ebola patient, because it takes a while for the disease to develop, your risk is probably very low. But be careful. And obviously, I think hygiene is always a good thing. Again, my heart's very much and my thoughts are very much with the people there and with everything else in the world, what they're going through.
Dr. Stephen Morse is a renowned epidemiologist at the School of Public Health at Columbia University in New York City and the global co-director of PREDICT, the infectious disease surveillance component of USAID's Emerging Pandemic Threats Program. Well, Dr. Morse, thanks so much for your terrific insights about Ebola. And we will, of course, be following this issue in the weeks and months ahead.
Thank you very much. I was glad to join you.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington. Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guest. Our engineer was Bob Doty. And joining me on the program was VOA health reporter Carol Pearson. And I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. From Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, the Voice of America has brought you Press Conference USA. You can email your questions or comments about this edition of Press Conference USA to pcusa@voanews.com. And to keep up with all the latest news, tune to the Voice of America on radio, television, or the World Wide Web. Join us again next week when another newsmaker speaks with journalists about the critical issues facing the United States and the world. We'll see you next week for another edition of Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.